Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. The Holocaust Shakedown.
Hello. Imagine that a robber walks into a bank, points a pistol at a teller, hands her a bag, and demands that she put all the money from her cash drawer in it. At first, she protests, but then, after he threatens to shoot, she fills the robber's bag with cash. And then imagine that as the robber walks out of the bank with his bag of loot, the bank guard opens the door for him, smiles at him, offers to hail a cab for him, and tells him to come again soon. After that, it's not difficult to imagine that he probably will come again soon. That's about the way it's been with the Jews recently. 2 years ago, they put a gun to the head of the Swiss people collectively and demanded billions of dollars in reparations for Swiss bank accounts they claimed had been owned by Jews who disappeared during the Second World War. The Swiss initially protested that unclaimed Jewish bank accounts from the 1930s and 1940s amounted at most to a few million dollars, not to billions. And besides, the war ended more than 50 years ago, and claims should have been filed long ago. The Jews threatened to shoot, figuratively speaking, by having their bought politicians in the United States prevent Swiss banks from doing business in America. Eventually, they walked away with $1.25 billion in loot, with the Swiss apologizing for not having coughed it up sooner. After that sort of success with the Swiss, one could hardly expect the Jews to give up extortion and go straight. So anyway, they were back again soon, with demands against the Volkswagen company for having used Jewish workers during the Second World War and providing them only with room and board, but not paying them union-scale wages. One might think that these Jewish workers would be grateful to Volkswagen for keeping them alive during the war, feeding them and giving them a roof over their heads when so many German civilians had only bombed-out ruins to live in. Well, if you thought that, you just don't understand Jews. The Jews told the Volkswagen company that if it ever wanted to sell any more cars in America, it had better cough up soon. And the bought politicians and the media bosses in America began rattling their sabers and talking loudly about sanctions of various sorts against Volkswagen. And so, like the Swiss banks, Volkswagen coughed up the money. Then the feeding frenzy started, just as I told you it would 2 years ago, when I predicted that after the Jews had cleaned out the Swiss, they would go after other victims in a long list. Volkswagen wasn't the only company which had used involuntary labor during the war. The Jews went after Daimler-Benz and BMW and Siemens. And Switzerland wasn't the only country where Jews could claim that Uncle Abe had stashed some of his loot 60 years ago before the war. So they sued banks in France and in Britain and began moaning and whining in the media that the banks were being insensitive to poor, deserving Holocaust survivors who suddenly had remembered Uncle Abe's millions and needed it now. And then they remembered the insurance companies in Italy and Switzerland and Britain and elsewhere from whom they could claim that Uncle Abe once had had a life insurance policy. Then they remembered that the Swedes owed them gold, and the Danes and the Norwegians, even the Poles, whom the Jews had ruled as Bolshevik commissars for nearly 50 years after the war, owed them, they claimed. The racket has worked the same in every case. Pay us, or we will have our bought Gentile politicians pass laws making it impossible for you to continue doing business, and our people in the media will paint you as monsters who want to hang on to the profit you made when poor Uncle Abe and Aunt Sarah were crammed into gas chambers, and then the gullible Gentile lemmings won't buy your products. If you give us any trouble or resist our demands, we'll make an example of you the way we did with the Swiss banks. Just pay us the few $100 million we're demanding now, and we'll leave you alone. Otherwise, it'll end up costing you a lot more. And it has worked every time. Not one banker or businessman has stood up to them and flatly refused to pay. Not one president or prime minister has said to them, "All right, Jew boys, you try a boycott against my country, and we'll organize a boycott against Israel. We'll round up all the Jews in our country and send them packing." Not one has called the Jews bluff. They've all calculated that it is cheaper to pay the gangsters than to fight them, and so they pay. Honor means nothing to these businessmen and politicians. Principles mean nothing to them. All they care about is continuing to make money, continuing to stay in office. With this sort of attitude predominant among the Gentiles, one can hardly blame the Jews for turning to extortion on a larger scale than ever before. They are successful at it, therefore they continue to do it. And they don't limit themselves to Europe or to those who allegedly cooperated with the Germans in their demand for reparations. A few months ago, they filed a claim against Britain for $600 million. They claimed the British government confiscated from Jews between 1940 and 1942 when the British governed Palestine. Remember, the Jews were waging a guerrilla war against the British prior to 1948, when the British finally gave up and pulled out, letting the Jews slaughter the Palestinians and establish the Jewish state of Israel on Palestinian land. The Jews were kidnapping and murdering British soldiers in Palestine and assassinating diplomats. In 1946, the Jews used a terrorist bomb to blow up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, which was the British government headquarters. This Jewish forerunner of the Oklahoma City bombing killed a large number of British civilians and military people. And now the Jews are demanding $600 million in reparations from the British. And of course, the Jews also are expecting payoffs from American companies. Both Ford and General Motors had subsidiaries working in Germany when the Second World War began. The Ford plant in Germany made military vehicles for the Germans throughout the war, and the General Motors subsidiary, Opel, did the same. And so now the Jews are claiming that both Ford and General Motors owe them a great deal of money because of that. The Jews already have filed a class action suit against Ford in a federal court in New Jersey, seeking hundreds of millions of dollars in wages plus interest for Jews who worked in Ford's German plant during the war. And because the businessmen who run Ford and General Motors today are the same sort as those who run the Volkswagen company, they undoubtedly will pay off the Jews rather than risk having the media portray them as insensitive types who profited from the so-called Holocaust and now refuse to share their loot with the poor, deserving Jewish survivors. 200 years ago, the American motto was, "Millions for defense, but not 1 cent for tribute." But in those days, Americans were made of sterner stuff, and I assume that our people in Europe were too. Cash isn't the only thing the Jews are going after. They have decided that a substantial portion of the art treasures of Europe really belonged to Uncle Abe, too, 60 years ago, and ought to be returned to the Jews now. It is true, of course, that during the war, the German government had a keen interest in bringing as much Germanic art as possible back under German protection. They bought all the Vermeers and Rembrandts and Holbeins and Dürers and Halses and other Germanic artworks as they could from owners in the conquered countries and brought them back to Germany. And when the works the Germans were interested in were in the hands of Jews, they often brought pressure to bear and obtained the works at low prices. The Germans, however, generally weren't interested in modern art, certainly not in Jewish paintings by Chagall or Modigliani, for example. And a great many such modern paintings ended up in the hands of Jewish art dealers. In fact, the Germans often had agreements with Jewish art dealers, swapping the modern paintings they weren't interested in for the Germanic paintings they were interested in. The biggest of these Jewish dealers, Georges Wildenstein, was in Paris, and he acquired an enormous number of modern paintings during the war. After the war, he brought them to New York and later sold hundreds of them to museums and private collectors around the world. The Jews currently are engaged in a huge treasure hunt for those paintings now in Gentile hands which formerly belonged to Jews. The facts that most of these paintings were acquired by their present owners from Jewish dealers such as the Wildensteins, and that many of them were legally purchased from their Jewish owners during the war, are glossed over. All of these paintings are characterized by the Jews as, quote, art stolen from victims of the Holocaust by the Nazis, end quote, and they want it all back now. There's an interesting double standard here. A messy divorce in the Wildenstein family attracted public attention last year to the Jewish family's business dealings in Paris during the war. And another Jewish family claimed that the Wildensteins have artworks that actually should be returned to them because they were forced to sell them at fire sale prices during the war. The Wildensteins told them to buzz off. The statute of limitations for such claims expired long ago, the Wildensteins asserted. Of course, no Gentile owner dares make such an assertion. But in fact, there are statutes of limitations for most claims. Dormant bank accounts typically become the property of the government after being unclaimed for 20 years or so. But when the Swiss brought up that legality 2 years ago, the Jews went into their Persecuted Victim Act, feigning outrage that the Swiss should try to let a mere law stand between the Jews and what they were claiming in reparations. Whenever the Jews, in order to remind the world for the 6 millionth time of their victim status, have accused some elderly German or Pole or Ukrainian or Lithuanian of having mistreated Jews 55 years ago during the war, there is no question of a statute of limitations. If anyone mentions that legality, Jewish shrieking in all of their media quickly drowns him out. For an injury, real or imaginary, done to a Jew by a Gentile, there is no statute of limitations, no matter how much time has passed. The Jews still celebrate every year in their Purim festival the revenge their ancestors took on the ancient Persians 2,500 years ago through their control of a corrupt king. Yet, when the Polish government asked the government of Israel a few months ago to extradite a Jewish mass murderer, Solomon Morel, so that he could be tried in Poland for genocide, the Jews refused. There is a statute of limitations for extradition, the Israelis told the Poles, and you're too late. Morel was the Jew communist commissar of a concentration camp in Poland after the war, and he had tortured hundreds of Poles and Germans to death. When he saw the possibility of retribution looming, Morel, like thousands of other Jewish criminals before him, fled to Israel. The horrifying atrocities committed by Solomon Morel have been described in the 1993 book, An Eye for an Eye, by John Sack. This same double standard applies to every sort of interaction between Jews and non-Jews. It is a fact that in wars, people suffer losses. Usually, within a few years after the wars are over, people try to get on with their lives and they consider what is past to be past. If other people behaved the way the Jews behave, then every Englishman whose family residence got hit by a bomb during the Blitz of the Second World War would be clamoring now for the German government to reimburse him for the repairs that his grandparents had to make 55 years ago, plus interest, of course. And if it's all right to go back 55 years for claims, why not go back 135 years and let all of the Americans whose ancestors' homes and farms in Georgia were burned by General Sherman collect damages from the U.S. government now, plus interest, of course? Or why not go back 220 years and demand that Tony Blair's government pay reparations to all of those Americans whose ancestors suffered property loss from the Redcoats during the first American Revolution, plus interest, of course? I mean, if the Jews are allowed to keep score without regard for time, why shouldn't everyone else? Why not set up some sort of world court for reparations? I imagine that there are a lot of Palestinians who would like to file claims against the State of Israel. The fact is that we would have international chaos if everybody behaved the way the Jews do. So this raises two interesting questions. Why do the Jews behave the way they do? And why do we let them get away with it? Well, I've already given an answer of a sort to the first question. The Jews behave the way they do because we do let them behave that way. It's just like the case of the bank robber who will keep coming back until the bank guard stops being nice and shoots the robber. But there's really more to it than that. No one else is even inclined to make the sort of demands on the rest of the world that the Jews do. The Jews really are different. Their religion provides a few clues in this regard. It is a religion which tells them that all the property of the Gentiles really should belong to Jews, that the Jews are entitled to it. It's as blatant as anywhere in the 60th chapter of the book attributed to their prophet Isaiah, where they are told to keep their gates open all the time so that all the wealth of the Gentiles can be brought to them. Thou shalt suck the milk of the Gentiles, the Jews are told. And if you think that doesn't really mean what it sounds like it means, you should look into the Talmud, where the Jewish sages, the Jewish interpreters of the Bible, explain to the rest of the Jews what it means. The Talmud tells the Jews that only Jews are human beings, that the Gentiles are just animals created by the Jewish tribal guard Yahweh to be used by the Jews like other animals are used. Because Gentiles are merely animals, they can't really own anything, and it is the duty of the Jews to make sure they don't. Now, all of this biblical stuff and Talmudic stuff is very old and quaint and might seem irrelevant to a lawsuit against the Ford Motor Company by the Jews today. But this old and quaint stuff is the basis of the Jews' religion today. The religious Jews really believe it. And the non-religious Jews, the atheist Jews, behave as if they believe it. And I think that in a certain sense they do. I think this belief is in their blood. I think that this is what accounts for their almost incredible arrogance in their dealings with non-Jews. And of course, there's not just belief. There's also calculation. They understand that the success of their current effort to swindle the rest of the world out of every cent they can depends on three factors. It depends on their control of the mass media. It depends on the unprecedented degree of political corruption which exists almost everywhere in the Western world, on the unprecedented degree of democracy. And it depends on the confused and demoralized state of Gentiles everywhere. There never before has been a time when the Jews have wielded as much open power as they do today. No previous government in the United States has had as many Jews in positions of power as the present Clinton government. And that's pretty much the way it is everywhere in Europe, too. The Jews around Clinton are mirrored by high-ranking Jews around Tony Blair in Britain. In Russia, the Jews not only hold most of the key posts around the alcoholic and ailing Boris Yeltsin, they have one of their own as prime minister. And nearly everywhere, except in the United States, the Jews have succeeded in having laws passed making it illegal for a patriot to tell his countrymen what the Jews are up to. In Britain, in France, and in Germany, hundreds of patriots are rotting in prisons today because they dared to speak the truth about the Jews. In Switzerland, the Jews succeeded in having similar laws passed before they began extorting money from the Swiss. Only in Russia today are any significant number of patriots speaking out against the Jews and daring the government to try to silence them. And I suppose it seems reasonable to the Jews that when they have so much power, they should use it to their advantage. They should go for everything they can get. The opportunity may pass. And they are going for it everywhere and in every way. It's interesting to note that this display of unbridled greed and arrogance has made even some of their fellow Jews a little nervous. Charles Krauthammer, a Jewish writer for the Washington Post, the second most powerful Jewish newspaper in the United States, wrote a column last month which begins with the words, and I quote, "The pursuit of billions in Holocaust guilt money has gone from the unseemly to the disgraceful," end quote. Krauthammer refers to the whole racket as a Holocaust shakedown. It's not that Krauthammer doesn't think the Jews should have all the money they can get from the Gentiles. It's just that he's appalled by the reckless display of naked, unprincipled greed as more and more Jewish shysters, that's what Krauthammer calls them, as more and more Jewish shysters trample each other in their current feeding frenzy. What if the Gentiles notice? What will the Gentiles think? Now, the unfortunate fact is that no non-Jewish writer for a major newspaper would dare to write what Krauthammer wrote. Not even in the United States, where it's still legal to write such things. They're all afraid. For two generations, the Jewish media have conditioned them by instantly and loudly accusing anyone who opens his mouth of being a racist or a hater or an anti-Semite. They've been conditioned to run for cover whenever they hear one of those accusations. And that is the answer to our second question. Why do we let them get away with it? Their media control keeps the couch potatoes confused and unaware. The corrupt politicians who have come to characterize our democracy are always ready to front for them and betray the people whose interests they are supposed to be representing. And those among us who are perceptive enough and independent-minded enough to understand what is happening are nearly all too cowardly to speak out. So it is easy enough for me to predict that the Jews will keep coming back for more and more and more until they either have it all, as in Russia today, or what Charles Krauthammer is concerned about happens and the Gentiles notice. But really, the former outcome is much more likely. Thanks for being with me again today.